You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Louise Erdrich's latest novel, The Roundhouse, is narrated by a 13-year-old boy living in a North Dakota Ojibwe reservation who sets out to investigate and avenge a brutal attack on his mother. It's the second part of a planned trilogy, the follow-up to The Plague of Doves, which was a finalist for the 2009 Pulitzer Prize. This book is published by Harper, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Louise Erdrich back to our show today. Hello.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here again.
So what ties this novel to The Plague of Doves? Is this you're following the same families over a number of generations?
Well, I didn't know it was going to actually follow The Plague of Doves. What happened was I knew that I wanted to write about this particular political situation, but I didn't want, of course, to write a political book. I wanted to write a book about a human story. I wanted to tell a story, and I didn't know who was going to come forward. Well, Judge Coutts and his wife Geraldine were blessed with a son.
Late in life.
Late in life. And he
and
came
that was
forward.
In the first book.
No, it wasn't in the first book, but, you know, this 13-year-old boy's voice started talking to me. And honestly.
Well, from the start?
From the start. And I'd been searching for some voice, some way to get into this situation. And once he started talking to me, I thought, who's he going to be? And I blessed them with a son.
Well, this takes place in the same place,
yes,
Turtle Mountain Reservation, North Dakota. Is that
where
you grew up?
It's not actually the Turtle Mountain Reservation. It's where I grew up. It's where I'm an enrolled member. But this particular reservation is an amalgam of Anishinaabe or Chippewa or Ojibwe reservations.
Mm-hmm. I have to imagine separate the different things and assume that they're pretty much all the same in all the different reservations.
Different, but you know the jurisdictional issues are very much the same.
Is Couts a common name?
No. No, I try not to use common names. I don't want people to think, well, that's what happened to so and so, or, you know, this is my aunt.
You said that this voice just came to you, and then you had to live with it consistently over a time.
Right, a 13-year-old boy, and I thought, why? But I loved it. I went with it. In fact, I said it in 1988 because that was the first year that he would have known about the first season of Star Trek: The Next Generation. You know, he's a kind of somewhat geeky kid, and I loved writing him, and I fell for his whole earnestness, but his hope to be wild, his love for his mom, you know, and his need for independence from his family, his angers, but the way he came to be protective of his parents.
Well, that doesn't make him all that different from a lot of American teenagers.
Exactly. And not so different from who I was. I was a tomboy. I had my bike. You know, I had a lot of freedom. I grew up in a small town in North Dakota.
The Plague of Doves revolved around a lynching. This novel also begins with a crime. Why do you want to have crimes at the center of both stories? And are these crimes based on real events?
The first one was absolutely based on a real event, and this one is there's so many stories that are similar to this crime.
Well, there are a lot
crime.
Of rapes, unfortunately,
well, unfortunately,
in American society and on the
large.
Reservations especially.
Yes, but in the statistics that I learned about and that haunted me were that 1 in 3 Native women are raped, 8% of those crimes are committed by non-Native men. Tribal courts have no jurisdiction over non-Native people. These crimes are so hard to prosecute, and the murder rate is 10 times the national average for Native women. I mean, Native women have basically an assault against them and no recourse in the American justice system.
Well, the tribal police, okay, can handle a case like that, but the regular police can.
No. The federal government has to step in because, you see, there's different sorts of land as on every reservation. Historically, There will be different types of land and different jurisdictions over each piece of land. So it's very complicated. There's a tangle of laws. You know, basically it's a big spaghetti mash of laws that make it very difficult to obtain justice. So when this happens, you know, it becomes, of course, a very human problem where this family is really torn apart over how to obtain justice. And the boy, of course, cannot bear to see his mother in pain.
Well, she's withdrawn from the world, refuses mm-hmm. to speak about the crime. Mm-hmm. Would that be typical of Native American women?
No, I don't think.
Because she's
this
a rather
is...
sophisticated woman.
Exactly. I think this is actually, you know, it's a post-traumatic stress reaction that she has before it was really talked about or named. And she also is protecting someone else who was with her during the crime. So there are many reasons for her to stay silent and many reasons for her to still be trapped in that horror.
She won't name her attacker.
She can't. She can't for several reasons that become apparent in the book.
Now, she's a tribal enrollment specialist. What does that mean?
That means that she looks through people who are interested in being enrolled in the tribe. She continues to enroll people who are born into the tribe. But she has to know everybody's, as he says, secrets, who is born by which person and how much. She has to quantify the amount of heritage that each person has.
When does it stop counting?
It's different in every tribe, but the federal guidelines are at 1/4. But some tribes go down to other definitions, and some tribes are half. And, you know, it's up to every tribe to say.
Her husband, Basil, is a tribal judge.
Yes.
How does he react to the crime?
Well, he reacts as any man would react. He wants justice done immediately, but he knows immediately also that justice is going to be very complicated to obtain, whereas Joe, who's 13, just says, I'm going to find him. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to do, you know, this is what I'm going to do. But his father is a judge. He has to go through the proper route.
Well, he's also the victim's husband,
yes,
and he has that emotional reaction, but he's has a professional assessment of the whole thing because
it's in his
he's
mind immediately,
judge.
Right.
This is a more professional couple than most of the people on the reservation, more well-to-do.
Well, that's the case in every reservation. You know, what one is probably struck by on going into reservations is that there are, of course, people who are professional, who are in charge, who are educated, and there's a range of people, and there is in this book.
So as you said, when Joe feels not enough is being done, he sets out to solve the crime on his own. How does he go about that?
Well,
people don't even know where the exact place the attack happened.
Well, he has friends, and they fumblingly go about trying to figure out what might have happened. So some of this is funny. I know it's a story like any story where boys do things that get them into trouble and do absurd things, and their elders are both amused and horrified. And in this case, the elders are sometimes storytellers. Sometimes they are, you know. Joe is in desperate love with his aunt, who's a model of she's like a goddess to him in some ways, and in other ways, you know, not. It's a story about him, and I really miss writing in his voice.
Well, you could do it again, can't you?
I don't know if I'll ever be able to. It's like he's not 13 anymore. Yeah, you know.
The book we're talking about is The Roundhouse, Louise Erdrich's latest novel. What is this, your 14th or so?
I can't remember, you know. Here I am writing as a 13-year-old, and I can't even remember how many novels I've written. So
I think it is your 14th, the second
Thank you.
In this planned
Thank
trilogy.
Thank you. You're on top of this.
and the third one is going to be in a totally different voice?
It will be, but it will be part of this trilogy. Yeah, I've become interested in writing about what it means when injustice, what's the legacy? You know, what happens two generations of people who understand that there isn't justice to be obtained. What happens to the community?
Well, this is, in a way, a crime novel, but it's also paints a detailed picture of life on the reservation. Do you think this type of fiction can be a way of examining social issues?
I hope so, because I, as I said, I'm a storyteller and a writer and a novelist. I'm not a nonfiction writer. I wish I could do that sometimes.
But for example, while Joe is waiting to see his mother in the ER, a white woman asks him, "Don't you people have your own hospital?" Not surprisingly, he has a pretty bad reaction to that. Is that kind of racism still a commonplace?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think being out east where, you don't have border reservation towns in the same way, although there is certainly a very vibrant Native communities out here, there's been a systematic buildup of racism in some of these border towns that is just casually cruel.
Do you think it's because in the East there weren't battles in the 19th century as there were in places like North Dakota?
Unfortunately,
you know, the only good Indian is a dead Indian.
No, that was certainly there is certainly a history here of war, depredation and cruelty, but it was probably captured more thoroughly in newsprint by the time settlers moved out into the West.
You're one of the best known Native American writers. Does that force a certain sense of responsibility on you?
Well, I try not to think so, because I don't think of myself exactly as a spokesperson or a Native American writer per se. I mean, I write about my German heritage, about whatever comes to me. But in this case, I did want to write about this particular truth. And as I said, Joe really rescued me in going about it. I knew I couldn't write a nonfiction piece.
What kinds of feedback do you get from tribal members?
I get very positive feedback from people, but, you know, I think that there's a certain politesse about this, so I'm sure there's people who can't stand my work, too. You know, people are generally pretty polite to me, but
you also have a bookstore in Minneapolis called Birch Bark Books. Does it focus mainly on Native American works?
That's the focus, but it's a general bookstore. It's a small place. It's not a lot bigger than your studio, but it's packed with books.
Well, what impelled you to go into the bookstore business at a time when so many people are getting out of it? Larry McMurtry, just another writer, sold off all his stock. It's just you and Ann Patchett. Oh, I understand Garrison Keillor also has a bookstore.
Garrison Keillor, and I just spoke with him to Booksellers Association the other night, and it was wonderful, because we all have this sense that the little independents are somehow still sticking it out, surviving, coming around. I don't know why, but we are surviving. We have a wonderful group of people who really do support us.
Well, there are some people who still prefer to read books.
Now, thank God for the people who have that tactile, you know, sense that books are part of the human thought process, I guess.
I did see a cartoon once where somebody is looking at a book and says, "Yeah, it's interesting, but I don't think people are ready to give up parchment."
I know.
Where does the title "The Roundhouse" come from?
The roundhouse in Ojibwe culture, and in almost every Native culture, has a sacred space, and it's round. You know, it follows the turn of the seasons. It follows the stages of life. It follows really everything in nature has a circular process.
I wonder why that is throughout Native American cultures. If you go to the Southwest, the mm-hmm. Kiva mm-hmm. is also a round structure. Mm-hmm. But I doubt that there was very much contact between the Pueblo Indians of the South and the more nomadic tribes of the North.
Why is it? I think it's a natural response to a natural cycle of life in the world. You see, you know, yurts in Mongolia, and you see the
igloos.
The
lap,
yeah, it's also a very it's a natural, naturally easily built type of piece of shelter.
Well, Hogan's as well, but
exactly.
But is the roundhouse a place to live in or a place to for religious ceremonies?
No, it's for ceremonies, and so the fact that a crime occurs there is a huge violation, mm-hmm. and it's a violation of entire people and not just one particular woman.
When will I be seeing you with the third in the trilogy?
I don't know.
At least we have
soon,
to stop
I
meeting
hope.
Like this.
I know, but we should. We have to.
Seven or eight times on the show.
I know.
And thank you for coming back this
I'm
time.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you. It's a delight to see you.
Louise Erdrich's latest novel, her 14th, the second in a trilogy, is called The Roundhouse, and it is published by Harper's.
Thank you.